shores of Neverland, a hideaway at sea.
Yo-ho!
Yo-ho!
Let's go!
Let's go!
A pirate band outwits the plans of Captain Hook and Smee.
Yo-ho!
Yo-ho!
Let's go!
Let's go!
The merry crew of Neverland pirates through and through, they're jolly buccaneers. Joining with Jake and the Neverland pirates, come along, we need some volunteers. Aboard me hearties and be a pirate true.
Let's go
with Jake
and the Neverland Pirates.
We'll set the course together. Come on and join the crew.
Yo ho, let's go!
Climb aboard me hearties. It's the Day Trippers. Two must wins in the bag, but all that means is that the next two are now must wins as a result. Success begets expectation. It was a real Jekyll and Hyde of a performance against Swansea, and it's left us with plenty to talk about. Players we've waxed lyrical about were well off the boil. We're looking at you, Emery. The captain neutered his contribution somewhat with an early yellow, but came up trumps. Mignolet showed the composure and reflexes of an odds-on favourite for the Golden Gloves. Sacco made clowns of the home fans by being imperious on his recall. And the manager, often maligned over his in-game tactics, out-tactic everyone in the world ever, even Timmy. Reporting for duty against medical advice and sporting some highly dubious prior cheek eyewear. Following my recent head implosion, I'm Long John Trev Downey. And joining me in the bunker tonight is a man on the line called Neil Poole from We Are Liverpool fanzine. And in the bunker itself, we have Andy Nomics Young, Neil Grayer than Grey Grey, and of course, Captain Deletion himself, Phil Casey.
Yarr!
Let's begin with a review of Swansea 0 Liverpool 1. Just the one game to talk about, so let's focus on that one. Pretty much a tough bastard of a ground for us since Swansea have returned to the top tier. Monday night was no different. Ultimately though, Liverpool finished with 3 points in the bag, and that looked far from likely at half time. So we should really start with the man who seems to have been responsible for delivering that victory more than anyone. That's the gaffer himself. Neil, your thoughts on Brendan's management of the game?
I think he definitely was responsible for it. I'll be honest with you, I was sceptical at first of whether he was responsible for it, because I've always had the view that, you know, any manager at all should know all the different formations, and therefore, if you're standing there doing your day job as such, and another manager puts out a certain formation that is beating your formation, then that's your day job to know what you then change it to. There's only so many sort of formations in the world. But the more I started to think about it, I think the more I realised I was being like sort of a bit cynical and probably quite unkind, in fact, because I always remember when Rafa Benitez was here at the same time as Jose Mourinho, and they both had a habit of substituting and affecting the game. And I always remember being quite sort of upset that Jose Mourinho was always lauded as a, you know, as a genius for his substitutions, while Rafa was always criticised for having got it wrong in the first place and therefore having to make the substitutions. So being consistent with that view, the more I thought about it, I think it was entirely down to Brendan Rodgers. And he was obviously making the changes in the first half as well, and when he swapped Sterling and Lallana around. So, you know, he's made a change there. But, I mean, it's great because I was watching at half-time when we were discussing what should they actually do. And I wasn't too sure. And when he came out and he did that, that's the right thing. A football manager of Liverpool should be coming out and thinking of something that Liverpool fans can't. And that actually works. And that's what he did. Yeah. So I think it was entirely down to him. Like the whole thing, like a diamond with three in the back and everything. Not too sure that that's done that often. So no, absolutely credit to him for coming up with the idea. And yeah, maybe you would expect a manager to do that, but a lot of them don't. And most fans of most teams, that's what they criticise their managers for. You know, only have sort of one or two ideas. So no, yeah, I think it was entirely down to Brendan Rodgers. And obviously, at half time as well. I think he's obviously, you know, he's had a bit of a go with them. So maybe it's not just a tactical thing that Rodgers has done. It's also the man management and, you know, the old school stuff that he's done in terms of just, you know,
motivation and all that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Andy, to be fair about the whole thing, you can talk about whether whether he reacted to a bad situation which he created himself in the first place, but let's start from the start, and that was a ballsy enough team selection in terms of the people that were left out.
Just on the formation, like the whole thing of playing three and then a diamond is unseen, and I thought like it left us very vulnerable down the left and right, but only Swansea are that bad. Like they've got so bad, it's unbelievable. Like another team would have put us to bed in the first half, and I don't think it was all formation. It was just a lack of urgency, and I'm quite worried now going forward that the team aren't going to move the ball forward as fast as they have been, you know. But I mean, I was quite happy with the team selection. Sacco back in, like it was the obvious one, you know. It's the one you fear that he might leave out, but you know, we have a situation here now where Rodgers is sort of doing what the fans have been shouting at for ages, and it's been going on a long time. So
so you were happy with the personnel starting, irrespective of the layout of them and the formation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was quite interested to see how Lallana would work out in that right wing back role. And he kind of changed it fairly sharply. So I wouldn't mind seeing a bit more of that, because I think the way Lallana is at the moment, he might kind of find his feet there like other players have found their feet in that position.
That's an interesting one, and that Andy focuses on Lallana there, Neil, because when we come to the idea of favourites, and an awful lot of people would have thought, oh Jesus, Lovren's going to start, isn't he? But no, Sacco came back in, as Andy said, that was the sensible thing to do. Gerrard was floating around, people were worried that, you know, he'd start when perhaps he wouldn't have been the best choice to start. But Lallana, is he one of the last ones that hangs around in that kind of, is he a favourite of Brendan's category? You know, did it seem to be that Brendan was trying to find a spot for him to work?
I don't think so, per se. His form fluctuates a lot. Like, it's only a couple of weeks back just before he had that injury. Remember, he was out for a couple of he was probably our best player for a short spell, for maybe three or four consecutive games. Then he came back in. He found it hard to find that form again. But I don't think that he's trying to find necessarily some way to shoehorn him into the first 11. I mean, there's a problem there, right wing back. Isn't it? I mean, that's obvious. So you have to try it. Like what he's done up to this point in the season so far, he's trying different personnel in different places. That maybe it would just click, because when Lallana's in there, you allow Sterling to go forward, because maybe he was the obvious choice there. So, and he changes around then, and things seem to work out. But in terms of the personnel, I think he got the personnel fairly bang on from in terms of the starting 11. I don't think. And I don't think it was the tactic either that was the problem in the first half. It was just the formation that we're playing. It's so dependent on quick, sharp passes and accuracy in the pass. I mean, Allen and Henderson, they wouldn't be people you talk about in the really high bracket of pass and accuracy. So they have to be playing at a level of 8, 9 out of 10 for that formation or that diamond formation or the 4-3-3, whatever you want to call for it to work. So the fact that they were a little bit below par and the passing wasn't as snappy as it usually is, and it wasn't finding the feet every single time, that caused more of a problem rather than the formation we started with. I thought if players were playing beneath their level for the first half.
Fair enough.
Like, I know Carragher and Neville went on a lot there at half time about how Swansea have got it so right tonight and they've been excellent in all of this. Like, lots of teams have played with a kind of a screen in front of our back players, you know, and chased down and pressed. But we've been able to manage a lot better at other times. It just so happened that Liverpool were like, it was like they were fucking drunk or something at the start.
Yeah.
Like, how bad was Allen at the start? how much better was he in the second half? It was like they couldn't string two passes together. So people get caught up on formations and shapes and all that. It's for me, like, it's always about just the philosophy and the idea that Brendan has with the team, and that's using the ball and making the ball work as opposed to the players. And they just weren't doing it in the first half. It wasn't, there was a much better output in the second half.
Well, is your summarization then of the whole thing then, that basically in the second half, are you reducing it down to an effort thing?
I think they just got a fucking kick in the arse.
You think it's a half time? Okay.
I think he must have been asking questions of certain players, going, "What's going on?"
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Fair play to him. The credit has to be the change of shape can help as well, because it freshens up the players, and psychologically the players have a new idea. Now the formation didn't really change, so Jared came on and they changed the grenade formation.
Yeah.
It was like you rolled a grenade onto the pitch.
Yeah.
With Jared, and then when it blew up, all the players, wherever they ended up, that was the shape for the rest of the game. But it didn't just automatically change it, but when Jared came on, and you know, you seen him kind of pointing out where to be, and he sort of sat at the bottom
at the base,
I mean, it worked out, but I mean, the energy and everything else from the second half
was the main thing. Yeah. Phil, would you hook in what Andy's saying there?
In a way, look, I think Rodgers managed it very well in terms of the change of shape and the change in, you know, going back to that pressing that we'd stopped pressing. Like, and it wasn't just that game. We'd stopped pressing over the last couple of games. We weren't pressing as ruthlessly or as hard as we had been. And sometimes that can set into the players, even though they set out with a game plan to do something, they don't necessarily execute it because they've fallen into a lull or into a way of playing in previous matches and have gotten away with it. He'd said himself that he expected Swansea to play a diamond. Now, I think, you know, I actually think this game was a very good test for us, because eventually, and something Andy has said previously, teams are going to look at that 3-4-2-1 system or 3-4-1-2 system, whatever way it is, and look to how do we counteract it. And I thought Gary Monk, to his credit, he did it very well with setting the diamond up that way and getting the way they played. Because essentially all they did was, by putting the diamond in there, they let us come down wide, dealt with whatever was going into the box, and then we didn't have the space behind, you know, the space in front of their back four to get the two boys, Sterling and Coutinho, and ended up in Lallana and Coutinho, to bounce around, and they just didn't have the space because there was always a player there. So I wouldn't criticise him there. My only thought was that maybe he could have changed a little bit earlier. And I know he changes it at half time. I know that happens, right?
And Lallana changed, to be fair. He sees that's not working.
Yeah.
Changes it up. And that made him an immediate difference.
And that's not having a pop at him. You know, I thought he has the players on the pitch to change shape earlier if he needs be. And going back to something Neil Poole said there about, you know, Jose used to get lauded for changing tactics. I think he used to get lauded because he changed tactics so early in games. He wasn't afraid to make a substitution after 25 minutes, or he wasn't afraid to change completely the shape after 20, 30 minutes in a game to because it clearly wasn't working. And I thought that maybe in the first half, it's a very light criticism. It's not something that I'm going to beat him over the head with or anything like that. But I think with Emre Can there, he wasn't having a particularly good game where he was, and they seemed to target him with Gomez that was there. But I thought there was a time when I thought to myself, do you know what? Actually, if he pushed Can into the centre of defence like that, where he can step in and become an auxiliary midfielder and allowed him to go to a diamond. And have the lads, you know, Skirtle and Sacco to play more as orthodox centre backs at times, maybe we would have got more possession and more ownership of the ball, because again it would have pushed Henderson and Allen that little bit further and would have nullified the effect of Derek Diamond. But look, that's just watching the game, and that's looking at and thinking to yourself, well, you know, is there something we could do here? He does go and do that in the second half, and we reap the rewards because of it, because we totally dominated the second team. Like we absolutely crucified them in the second half. We just put them to bed. They just offered nothing against us. And again, it goes back to...
It was nice and cynical, wasn't it?
It was really well managed. The other bit that I think maybe, you know, that needs to be looked at and needs to be asked, and it's one I'm sure he'll ask himself, by putting Sturridge in, going back to the idea of the mobile front three, when we didn't have a recognised striker in Sturridge, Lallana and Coutinho that was playing that, they just ran everywhere constantly, right? And as much as, like, I know we've laughed and joked about Sturridge having a dump on the pitch, once he scores it doesn't really matter, but he's not scoring at the moment. And he isn't putting in the same effort as the other two boys do. When you take that bit of pressing away at the top end, you know, the real hard pressing that's going on, it just allows their back four to be a bit more comfortable, because you could see Sturridge trying to press it, but he doesn't press it. He's not aggressive in the way that he presses the defenders. Whereas the likes of Sterling and Lallana, Coutinho, you could even see it in the first half when we did anything decent up the top end, it tended to be either Coutinho or Sterling or Lallana and Sterling going and really aggressively pressing their back the two or three defenders that were on the ball at the time. So that's the only things. But look, overall, his performance last night was that of a manager where if you see it, say, that's brilliant. He's identified the flaw, he's identified the weakness, and he's executed the game plan the way he wanted to execute it, and executed it brilliantly because it got us into the game, it got us something in the game I'll be honest with you, I don't think anybody thought it was going to come. The other thing is the goal. Like, he does direct the goal from the sideline. Like, you know what I mean? It was pointed out in Sky and all, but you can see him. You know, and that's real sort of, a real sort of coach. Now, I've gone away from the manager, but like a real coach. He's seen the things, he wants them to do something, he's asked them to execute it, and he's even in-game coaching. And going back to Neil's earlier show, it's very Rafa as well, because Rafa used to constantly coach when he was on it, telling people where to go, this, I want you here, I want you there. But Brendan, as we all know, Brendan's a very good attacking coach, so if he wants to coach attacking-wise on the sideline in games like that and it leads to goals, fucking coach away. Do that as much as you want, because it's brilliant to look at, you know.
I really enjoyed the last 4 minutes of the game where we basically killed it dead and took throw-in after throw-in. It was wonderful. Yeah. Sturridge contributed more than he did.
As I said to you at the time, the one thing I'd say about that was the best killing of a game I've seen in about 5 or 6 years by a Liverpool team. At no stage in those last few minutes did I think we were going to throw it away or do something
which
stupid,
is new, yeah.
which is something that we as Liverpool fans, we've gotten used to the idea that it's going to be fucking hairy scary over the last 5 minutes of games if we've got a narrow lead.
Yep, absolutely. Well, look, let's take it on and have a look at a few of the players, and I suppose we'll start with the captain. Captain fantastic, Mr. Henderson. Neil, well, you're looking at this player, he does seem to have a hell of a lot going on. People like to talk about his limitations, but he started to prove those people wrong. If you're looking at him and you're comparing them, so a shorthand way for people to understand him, is he not like Gerrard at all, but is he more like Frank Lampard in the way that he operates? I mean, even the goal, you know, it's a lovely long burst and run, well-timed, and you know, a deflection, fluky looking finish, you know, that he just drives in. Classic Lampard, really, isn't it?
I mean, if he gets the goals that Frank Lampard gets, and I'm more than happy for the comparison to be there. I don't think Frank Lampard's probably got the physique to run around the same way as Henderson has. But yeah, if it's there. But the same time, as much as we ridicule Lampard, and there's always the comparison between him and Gerrard, you know, he is obviously a good player and he's scored a hell of a lot of goals over the years. So if there's anything out of his game he can take in terms of, you know, arriving on the ball late. I don't know if that's a bit of a Chelsea thing. I remember Joe Cole always used to get loads of spawny goals when he played for Chelsea, but he never actually got them when he played for us.
Neil, he couldn't fucking breathe when he was playing for us.
I wouldn't say per se he's more like Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard. But I would say if he's got some of those facets to his game, then I'm more than happy for him to have them, certainly.
Just on his performance, I heard someone say, kind of sum it up nicely, he did kind of neuter himself a little bit with the early yellow, didn't he, in terms of putting himself about and the level of intensity that we expect and the challenges from him. It did kind of take a little away from his performance, certainly in that first half, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those games where sometimes you can spot, you know, within the first 5 minutes of the game, you think, oh, fucking hell, what's going on here with him? Because, I mean, like, you know, we kicked Shelby in the face and then he sort of gave away the free kick, on the edge of the box. He was losing the ball all the time. And it was one of those, like, literally within the first few minutes, you're thinking, oh, Jordan's not on it today at all. But I've got a feeling that, it's hard to say with Henderson. I'd like to say that the yellow wouldn't actually bother him, but just as I was about to say that, I've just actually thought back to, obviously, the sending off that he got last season against Man City. And, you know, there's a horrific sort of experience he's had of getting two yellows and getting sent off and towards the end of the season. So I don't know if that is in the back of his mind. It wasn't in mine, but I've literally just remembered it as I've spoken about it then.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, maybe you've got a point, but you would hope as a professional footballer that, you know, anytime, Trev. As a professional footballer, you can just get on with the fact that you've got a yellow. I mean, he's not the type of player that dives in and gets loads of yellows anyway. So,
yeah,
it may have used him to some extent, but I think he was just shit, to be honest, in the first half. I don't like the rest of them were.
Yeah, Andy, what about that? Like, just basically like the rest of the team. And as you said earlier on, the whole lot were off the pace. And then he picks it up in the second as well.
Yeah, well, he sort of did. I don't think there was a performance in the team apart from Miggs first half and Sacco and Sterling second half.
Yeah. I think Allan got
a hell of a lot of praise, but to me the standout ones were Sterling and Sacco's second half performances. Allan was terrible in the first half, really bad. but I appreciate he was excellent in the left hand side of the diamond. He was, in fairness to him, and he went on a couple of moves that were just very unlike him. Showed a little bit extra to his game, you know, when he was in the box and he was twirling around and everything.
Yeah.
So, no, in fairness, yeah, he was. Yeah, I take that back. Allan as well, then.
Jesus Christ, that could be a podcast first. I think we should probably. I'm going to move on before that goes wrong. On that idea of top performances, Neil, we did have some contenders there for our man the match. Andy's highlighted him there. Mignolet was tremendous. Sacco was tremendous. Skirtle had a decent game for himself. Joe Allan also. And who else do you imagine?
I felt Sterling in the second half.
I would fully agree with you there. I thought Sterling was wonderful when he went to that change of position. Who for you will stand out?
Over the course of that match, over the course of those 90 minutes, it'd be very hard to give it to anyone else bar Mingle, really. Sure, we wouldn't have been in this. We wouldn't, no matter how much we turned it around the second half, yep, we wouldn't have been in the game anyway. So, like, you can see, his saves were more important, as important as a goal in the first half anyway. So we wouldn't have had the opportunity to go back only for him. And then on from that, Skirtle has been remarkably impressive over the last... Oh, the last good few months now. I know it's probably not a very popular thing to say, but I mean, you can't deny the facts. He's been excellent, and it's to do with settling into the back three and having the two other guys either side of him. Sorry, your negatives are negated a little bit. I know that's probably a double negative, but anyway.
That'll do.
But yeah, like, so he's been really, really impressive for me. Rock solid, I'd say, in fact. Now, I know his distribution isn't great. Sometimes his headers don't go where they're quite supposed to go, but as a defender, he's doing really, really well. I mean, we know he's going to dive in and your heart is in your mouth sometimes.
Yeah.
But he's been really, really impressive for me, you know, I have to say.
And what about, he gets a little bit extra credit for being good, Jesse, considering that Emery Chan was slightly off the boil on his right-hand side, which is unusual for him.
Yeah, well, look, Chan was... That was probably his worst game for us, maybe, was it? In my opinion, I think
definitely,
it was, anyway.
He was isolated
as well, wasn't he?
He was.
In the first half, they picked on him. That sounds fucking stupid, but listen.
They picked on him,
yeah.
Look at you and your hair.
Thinking you're gorgeous.
And you're thinking you're gorgeous there. I think you're gorgeous.
Speaking of being picked on, have you ever fucking heard anything like the abuse that the Swansea fans had?
We're giving Sacco.
It was hilarious.
Yeah, but come here, he didn't snap, though, either. Fair play to
him. Just kept getting better and better.
Just getting better and better.
Like, where has that even come from? Had there been a previous incident?
No, he did a couple of shit things in the first couple of minutes in possession.
His first two touches were dodgy, and as a result, they went, dodgy.
Yeah.
Do you see when they were slagging him off, and he basically just ran past everyone?
Oh,
and then just laid off. Yeah. I'm shit, I am.
Yeah, well, actually.
But no, like, I suppose, talking about looking at the standout performers, the defence. In Skirtle and Sacco and Mignolet, those three there, they had to make up for Chan having a bad game. Now, many times, though, in the first half of the season, you know, if one of them was having a bad game, it inevitably led to the rest coming down to their level instead of retaining their level. And
the whole 11 coming back to their level as opposed to just about four.
It's a big thing. There's a bit of mental character there now that wasn't there before. And fair play to them, because I think the team themselves understand that these are constant must-win games. Mm. It's the old cliche. Every single game they're playing is a cup final at this stage. You know, So it's a credit to both Sacco and Skirtle that they retained their concentration, retained everything that was going on, and kept us going on it, because you could even see, you know, they were looking for those passes into midfield, and because Allan and Henderson weren't able to get turned and get on the ball and help with the out balls and move us into the different phases of play, they never lost it. Like, and that's a credit to them.
You'd wonder if Lavrin was in there, would they kept it together?
Well, I think that, look, you know, I don't really want to get into that
debate. It's a boy, but I know it is, but still, it's probably valid.
But what it does show is that, you know, maybe at last Brendan has identified that he knows what his first choice back three is, right? By putting Sacco straight back in for the must-win game against Swansea, it just shows you, I think he's definitely come up in terms of, you know, Brendan's estimation of how good he is and what he brings to the team. And similarly, like, putting Chan back in there, I know it wasn't his best game, but he didn't take him off either. The easy thing could have been to take him off at halftime and bring Lovren in, or even bring your man in.
Well, talk to me about how would you respond to this as Emery's biggest fanboy. Herschel was wondering, Herschel Murray says, could somebody explain how Lovren snuck onto the field in Emery Chan's kit? Which I think is a little bit of a harsh assessment of Emery's performance, but you can see where he's going. It was such an atypical performance.
Listen to me, right? Every player is going to go through peaks and troughs. Every player is going to have a bad game here and there, right? And Chan had a bad game, and eventually it was going to happen. You can't keep having blinders all the time. You know, and he had a bad game, but to his credit, I'll say it again, second half, pulled the socks up, got his levels back and played out the game well and stopped being a weakness down that side. So, you know, I really think that, you know, when we talk about the man of the match performances, it's very hard to give based on one person in the first half. I actually think Joe Allen did very well throughout the game. I didn't think his passing was great in the first half, but what he did was he was a bundle of energy. Where Henderson was flailing, he picked up the water, he carried it all and kept going and kept going. And his 1-2 off his face at the end of the game, that was world class. The look of shock when it hits his face. He flicks it up and it's like, that was meant to happen. Sure, I'm only a midget, but but genuinely, I think for him as well, we talked about it that it generally takes him a bit of time to come back, even if he's only had a minor injury. But fair play, he came back in, kept his standards, and got his passing right in the second half. And a lot does help with the change in shape. But you know, Mignolet, he didn't have much to do, in fairness, in the second half. His distribution is still a bit, but you know, the save that he makes from Sigurdsson's shot is world class. Yeah. It's absolutely world class. He's at full stretch. The first one, I'll be honest with you, as a goalkeeper, I wasn't jumping up and down about the first one, because you'd expect to save that one. It's not travelling like a bullet. It's coming at a nice speed, and it gives you enough time to get down and react to it, and he's able to get back up and cover off the second ball. But the Sigurdsson shot, it comes around the player and he has to readjust his feet and get over to it, and it's a fantastic save when you watch it.
And he gets two hands to it now, which is
fantastic. And it wasn't just the amazing saves. He was punching fuck out across.
But he's doing corners.
Going back to what we said about him before, he's approached the second half. Since he's been dropped, he's really played like a fellow with nothing to lose, and it's freedom as a player. It's freed his performance levels. He's no longer afraid to try something or do something, or you know, where he might have been second guessed himself about, oh well, I don't want to make
the self doubt is gone.
And I think but that comes from being, he knew that he was out the door at Christmas, if you know what I mean. Like, he knew he was basically going to see at the end of the season if he didn't sign someone in January, and then he'd probably be number two come the summertime. But because he put himself with that carefree attitude, what will be interesting to see is if we come around and we don't sign, say, a recognised number one, right, how he reacts to us signing another goalkeeper that puts him under pressure, where he might start then second guessing about what he's doing and making sure he's being safe.
On that form, he's worth points to us, like he was last year.
Yeah, yeah. You know, look
on that form.
Who was going to
compare? His kicking is still so laughably shite. I was actually enjoying how awful it was because he was so good. Because he was so good. Otherwise, you know,
if Mignolet had been in the form he's in now, towards coming at this stage last season, we would have won the league.
Yeah.
He wasn't, like, he's at a higher level now than he has been at any time at Liverpool. Like, he's a better goalkeeper than I thought he was.
What he's doing now, which is a huge departure from where he was for the first, say, 18 months he was at Liverpool, is he's dominating his box. Forget the distribution. He's dominating. He's, as you said, he's coming for every cross and he's getting to them, right? It's not that he's just coming and throwing a hand or whatever. He's getting to the 90% of the cross that he's coming for, and he's making a telling interaction with those crosses.
Proper connection, yeah.
And that's made such a big difference. And you can see his starting position is much higher in the box. When you look now, he's not afraid to be up around the edge of his box, where before he was sitting on this, he was camped on a 6-yard line, so there was a big distance to make up. And he's coming out, he's outside the box and all. There was even a time last night he was miles outside the box at one stage. And you're just saying, right, that's what you wanted him to do. That's what, when we were asking for, when we wanted to see him improve, that's exactly what we look for him to improve at. So, you know, it's great to see. Long may it continue. And had he been man of the match last night, it would have been well, well deserved, purely on that save alone from Sigurdsson, but the other stuff that goes on, but purely on that save alone from Sigurdsson, that's a turning point in the match when he makes that save.
Absolutely. Neil, another man whose name is getting thrown around there was Mamadou Sakho. Now, we had a couple of comments in from listeners talking about, you know, if we ran out of something to talk about, we could also always talk, said Chris, about the level of arousal achieved when Sakho glided past the whole Swansea side, which one of the lads mentioned a few minutes ago. And we had another one in from Red Mentat saying, how can you explain the media's endless criticism of Sakho, even though he's becoming one of our biggest assets? Now, it was funny to see the media, general media reaction being echoed in the Swansea crowd, but by God, he really did silence them as the match went on, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the media thing is just ridiculous. It's almost like, and I suppose you get this with fans, and we all do it, and we do it about our sort of, you know, our own scapegoat and everything. But if you spend months and months and months saying that someone's shit and ridiculing them, and if you're doing it publicly on television, then a lot of these pundits aren't all of a sudden going to turn around and say, oh, I was wrong. So they'll either just go silent on it. Well, they're not. He's actually given the credits that is deserved. I mean, I don't think he was quite as great as people were making out when he first came. I think how he's playing now and how he's been playing since Christmas is by far the best we've seen of him, and is probably the level that his fans who just supported him, regardless of how he's playing, thought he was playing. But he's been absolutely brilliant now. And this whole thing about an awkward style and things, I mean, I don't even notice that, to be honest. I'm not really sort of, you know, seeing. It's not something I'm particularly looking out for. And it's almost like, because everyone says all the time he's got this awkward style, you find yourself going, oh, yeah, Sakho's got an awkward style. But I'm actually thinking, I haven't actually noticed it myself.
No, it's a forced agenda, Neil. It really is.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. But, I mean, going back to something that Neil said, I think that in regards to Skrtel, I mean, everyone seems to be keen. Well, not everyone, you know, that's a bit of a generalisation. But there's a tendency to go, right, Sakho's the best, you know, is the defender that's making a difference. Chan is the defender that's making a difference. I think Skrtel has been just as good as Sakho and Chan. I think that three as a unit have been exceptional. I think the way they've sort of married together, and also with Mignolet, sort of as that back four, I think that's definitely a case of, you know, some's being greater than the whole of the part and everything. Sakho is a part of that, and Sakho has been absolutely excellent. But I think what's good about the way that unit works well is that even when Sakho was injured and Lovren came in, because it's ticking along nicely now, it's like it's just like a machine pairing along. It's like you could even put someone like Lovren in, who obviously isn't to the level of Sakho, and we still never conceded that many goals. Or you can make a change, you can put Johnson in there for a small amount of time. And like, you know, the world doesn't implode, even though we all expected it to. You know what I mean? So I just think that that back four, including Mignolet, it's been an absolute revelation. And Sakho, yeah, is a key part of that. But I mean, I'd give the credit as well to Skrtel and Chan. I mean, like, I think all of them together have been absolutely exceptional. And for me, I just wouldn't want to see that broken up at all now. However, I would be confident that if one does get injured, that it's not going to be the end of the world, which is what we've seen in the last few weeks.
Yeah, that is encouraging. Andy, to go to the far end of the park, we're talking about what's working well in the defensive part of the pitch. What's working not so well in the attacking part of the pitch, we've spoken about briefly, flagged it up there, is Danny Sturridge. He is struggling. There's no two ways about it. And it's hard to know whether it's fitness or form or a combination of both. Was he really unfortunate with that effort at the end, or did you find yourself, like me, kind of cursing him that he didn't take something a little bit more simple on than what appeared to be a very ambitious effort? But overall, talk to me about Sturridge.
Yeah, again, it was just one of his poorer games. There was parts of, especially in the second half, which you did impress me. He was adding something else that, you know, okay, this isn't coming off where I'm the lead striker and I'm supposed to the responsibilities here to score goals. He was coming short a lot and he was coming out wide right, and he was just being a team player, you know, just getting on the ball, moving it around, trying to find his feet. Look, Sturridge knows that chances are going to come for him. He might be enforcing a bit lately. He wants to be the man. That's what he's all about. It's not going to work that way. He's not going to just walk back into the team and just be the man. Like, Liverpool got themselves back to this level without him, with Sterling, Coutinho, Lallana, whoever, up Markovic across the top. And you might just need to start thinking a bit more like them players. Look, Sturridge is well able to put himself about. He's well able to come from different positions. Like, we've seen a lot last season, you know, when Suarez was in the team, and you wondered what they're going to do, how will they accommodate the both of them, because both obviously prefer to play through the middle. But when Sturridge had to play wide, he done it quite well, so he's just going to have to do that now. And
it's because it's happened before, though, Andy, isn't it? He's come back and been immediately effective, and that's why, you know, people were hoping that that would be the case again.
Yeah, we might have been playing a different way at the time, like, you know, when, like, Liverpool start, like, they're playing well, but if they start going to the levels they were last season, where they're blowing teams away early, where they're being really, like, a frightening team. Because I still don't think teams are coming to play Liverpool and being frightened. I think most teams are coming along thinking we can put this run to an end. Whereas last season, there was a stage where teams were just, didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
they were folding early on. So when Liverpool come back, or if they do, where there's a lot of, you know, we're getting a lot of ball on the final third, and he's getting more space, and teams are frightened and standing off. Sturridge is going to score goals.
But how much of us not being as frightened as we were is down to the fact that maybe he's not operating anywhere near at his level? Like, I mean, to shunt responsibility back onto him for a bit, to play devil's advocate, is it because he's underperforming that we are effectively less effective?
I think, I don't know. It's because he's only back so long.
Yeah,
it's hard to know. Like we said last week, that he seems to be holding something back. He's afraid. I think he's afraid that he might be out. He find himself out of team for the rest of the season. I didn't think his performance. It was poor, but I don't think it's. I still see every game it coming on a small bit.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think the game the weekend could suit him, but I probably wouldn't play him because because other players have been playing too well.
Okay. And
I think tactically, you know, the best thing to do would be to probably not play him. But I actually do think it could be the game that would suit him.
Okay, well, we'll definitely come. You remind me of that and come back to it when we're doing preview. Neil, just on Sturridge's effort towards the end. Yeah, dude, tell me. Towards the end of the match, his effort, what did you make of it?
That was fantastic, wasn't it?
Did you think so?
Yeah, well, the one that hit the post?
I genuinely didn't think it was fantastic at all.
I think for Sturridge, in terms of Sturridge, so rather than his the shot that hit the post at the end of the match, I think it's probably been mentioned before. He's a lad playing with the injury in the back of his mind. I mean, I don't think that's...
You reckon that's clear, do you?
I think it's crystal clear, because of the very nature of the type of footballer that he is, that he works in explosive movements, and his physiological makeup, if he doesn't recover proper from this injury, it could see an end to his career playing at that level, challenging for championships, Champions League, international level. I mean, he could drop down and play at a lower level, but he hasn't got that explosiveness in his game. The finer points of his games are going to disappear. I think not only is he struggling to come back from injury, he's so careful that he doesn't want to ruin the rest of his career. I think that's to me, it's plain to see that's on his mind, because he doesn't look to me like a lad who has sprinted at 100% since he's come back.
Yeah, in fairness, I think
so. But then, just to get back his chance at the end of the match, I thought it looked lazy, but I didn't think. I thought it was a little bit of genius.
Oh no, it's not lazy, but
if he scores, it brings back the adage about him shitting on the pitch and then just scoring.
It does. It does. Yeah, it's
that thing about.
It was a great. I thought it was great. Effort.
I think he's been ruined by Moreno dancing with him.
You reckon that's what did it?
Yeah, I think. Look, he was he looked to be back in form until Moreno decided to jump in on the dance. So Moreno's fucked it up.
He's getting away with murder, actually. Moreno, he's been shit lately.
He has. I tell you what, I wouldn't have taken him off. I would have taken Lallana off before Moreno. I think Moreno had started to come into the game in the second half.
He's the last sacred horse, Lallana. I'm telling you, he's the last.
He is the last sacred horse. There's something really sacred about.
Speaking of sacred horses,
as a crown.
Speaking of sacred horses, you like that for a segue?
I fucking love
Stevie
it.
G. Talk to me about Stevie G. Yeah, talk to me about
what's that, Captain Blackbeard?
Talk to me.
Pieces of hate.
Fuck off, me hearties. Talk to me about Steven Gerrard impact. So we've been calling out for it for a long time.
Listen,
did you see it working well there?
I said it at the start of the season.
Did you say it?
I did fucking say it at the start of the season. And if I didn't, I thought it at the start.
I said it. You caught it. Go on.
But you know, that's exactly what we want them. So get him on at 62 minutes. It was 2 minutes later.
62 minutes at the time,
it was 2 minutes later, but you know, he comes on. The thing about Gerrard for me was that he could always put in 25 minutes through this season, and then his legs seemed to go on him. Just it's pure age thing, like, you know what I mean? You're asking to play in centre midfield. I was starting to, when he appeared in centre midfield, I was like, oh no. But then you could see he's able to get around for those 25, 26 minutes that he's on the pitch. He's able to put it in. He sees what's going on. He, of all our midfielders, he was the one that's able to fizz a pass along the ground, right? If you look at all the passes up until then, even Coutinho was floating passes out to lads' feet, right? But if you fizz it along the ground, you know yourself, it just moves it so much quicker, and it means that you open play up and you can keep the movement going.
Did you see that coming? Did you see him coming and sitting deep? I didn't see it coming, but I did.
I always felt that, you know, whatever, where if he came on in the front three, or if he came on as the attacking midfielder for 25 minutes, you're going to get an absolute blunderbuss out of him. And again, he comes on and he showed another level that, you know, he's fully there. He's fully tuned in. He has what he needs to do for restricted time. And as I said to you, when you bring Steven Gerrard off the bench, the mental impact, going back to Andy's bit about, you know, blasting teams away, teams are looking at that and they're saying, bollocks. Here's Gerrard for 25 minutes. Woof. You know, no matter what's going to happen, he could step up and crack a free kick into the top corner, or he might just pull one out of his locker from nowhere.
But it hobbles your chaos theory when it comes on deep, doesn't it? It does hobble it.
It doesn't, because as Andy said, to bring the chaos theory back in, we went in with the grenade formation at that stage.
See
what happens. It's the new ones. There's a pin and all on the top of it, right? But genuinely, you know, I was delighted to say, and I hope he's used that way towards the for the rest of the season, because I think he offers us so much doing those small cameo roles that he could have a huge big impact. And it also, for Henderson, I know he didn't have a particularly great game, but he had a much better second half. But it retains his authority on the pitch. I know he hands the armband to Gerrard, but it's not that, you know, people are still, he's still the go-to man then for the games when they kick off, and he's still the man that's leading the team out into the pitch. And it's allowing him to grow mentally as a captain. I'm not saying as a player, but as a captain, he's feeling that, well, actually, no, I'm the on-pitch captain.
And Steve, he has the impact with Steven on the pitch.
Steve is the club captain. I fully accept it. When he comes on, I give him the armband. But I'm the fella who leads this team out, and it's me who's going to be responsible for this kicking off right and in the right way. So, you know, that's good. And I was delighted to see him. I continue to use him that way. I think he brings us so much when you use him that way. And there's no harm in it. You know what I mean? We get to use Steven Gerrard to his fullest potential for his remaining time with the club.
Well, look, we'll talk about Steven and whether he should start or not against United in the preview. But I just want to finish out on this topic before we go to the last little one. And just by asking you, Neil, for your thoughts on the idea of Gerrard as an impact sub for the rest of the season. Because we've talked about it on here, but it'd be interesting to get your take.
I think he's perfect for the impact sub because of the diversity he's got. I mean, it's not even a case of you bring him on to play in one position. Like you just said there, you didn't expect him to be put where he was put. I think he played so well there because it was essentially the position he played well in the second half of last season. You know, the deep lying thing. But what you've got there, I mean, you'd never thought that we'd think of Steven Gerrard as a utility player. But as a sub, that's exactly what he is in terms of, if we need to get a goal, you could put him in a front three. We could put him high up in the midfield. We could put him in a holding position, like we did against Swansea. So it's not. It's almost like, you know, you've got, like, you sort of three players in one there when you bring Gerrard on. Now, I don't think you'd be able to. We know that maybe he can't do it quite for the 90 minutes, but for that half an hour, if you've essentially got one player on the pitch who can play a number of positions, and therefore, depending on the way the game has gone and what is needed in that game, he will pretty much, unless like Mignolet is having a shit game or something, obviously he's not going to do it there, but pretty much he could at least be a solution for a problem, whether it'll work every time or not, I'm not too sure. But and he's shown that throughout his career, hasn't he? Like, you know, he ends up at right back at Istanbul, and there's always the thought that whatever position he would play, he would be the best player in that position on the pitch. But he's not that quite that player anymore, but he's still got that impact. And also what you said about this, I think we lose sight sometimes of this impact Steven Gerrard has on other teams, on other fans, is that I think we've been spent so long the last 2 years going on about sort of how he's not the player he was, is that you've got to remember not everybody else watches him week in, week out. For a lot of other people, he is still the Steven Gerrard that he was. So, you know, he's a psychological tool as well. And yeah, obviously, yeah, I think, good on him. But I wouldn't be starting for the rest of the season. I would be using him as an impact sub, no matter how much I love him, and I sort of want him to see him as many times as I can before he goes. I think it's better for the team if he is used in the, as a sub, yeah.
Yeah, Andy, speaking of utility players, everyone's kind of a utility player under Brendan Rodgers, it seems to be, but there's another utility player come off the bench towards the end of the match with a 100% statistic at the moment is Glenn Johnson. How'd you like them apples, Andy?
Don't like them apples. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's just
that's about the right answer,
it's
fella.
It's just like, yeah. It's just mad. It's just mad. I don't know.
He's a psychological tool, as Neil Poole would say.
Yeah. I don't know why you insist on Johnson. Like, you'd have anyone in the team ahead of him. I'm just sick of it at this stage, and everyone sort of thinks he'd be gone in the summer, but all this playing him just sort of suggests otherwise.
Yeah.
No need to be playing.
Phil, you wanted to come in on that because
I was delighted from 100% passing. And it was one pass, but like even still, it was 100%.
What a pass!
It went all of about 3 yards.
Yeah,
which is like, it is an improvement on what it
yeah. The ball was in the far corner of the pitch, so like there was never any chance of him even getting on the ball. It was basically Sterling and Sturridge up in the far corner.
I'm with Andy. Like I've. You know, I would have brought Lovren on sooner in that there, even there as a wing back than somebody that's not going to be there next year. Because I don't care. I don't think, even if Brendan wants to keep him, I think the club have made the decision that he's gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even as agent is out today saying that they're speaking to other clubs.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the sooner he's gone, the better, because it just puts this whole conversation to bed.
It does, yeah.
Even though he is now on 100% stat passing.
Yeah, and it has
was funny, as interesting as agent said there, I was listening, it could be Twitter telling Parkies, but Twitter doesn't lie, sure doesn't.
Never.
His agent said today, yeah, we're really thinking about going to Roma, but we haven't spoken to them and they haven't spoken to us. So I don't know what that means. Exactly. He could say anything. He's going to go and play in the NFL next year. We haven't spoken to anyone about it, so it's cool.
Could he play in the NFL?
He could.
What position could he play?
Right wing back.
He could play any Kicker. Position. Any Kicker. Position.
A punter.
A punter.
I don't know enough about American football to kind of put him somewhere, but I think he might be just better off there. That was so young.
One place he would not be is safety, let's put it that for sure. Neil, to finish this off and finish our review off, the result was a very enjoyable result, even if the match wasn't an enjoyable match to watch. We're pretty relieved at the end of it. It was, to go back full circle, the best seeing out of a game that we've actually seen as Liverpool fans in quite a while. It reminded older chaps like myself and Casey there of the '80s. It was lovely, beautifully cynical, and just a nice way to calmly finish a game.
Yeah, it was never in doubt. Sure, it was. We've been criticising Sturridge for being a little bit lazy, but he was intrinsic to it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he kept possession great. I know it was all down in the corner, and let's get a 1-0 away to Swansea, but that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's at the game after City. Who did we play after that? We won 2-0. I can't remember.
Borny.
Yeah, that was similar. We never looked in doubt from the first minute straight. I mean, that's a character trait that's developing in the team, and it all stems from the reliability at the back, and we have a good chance we're not going to concede here. Yeah. So that momentum, if you want, or that character has been building up for a couple of weeks now. I know it may have died off in the cup match, but don't mind the FA Cup, it's ridiculous.
But I'm not having that favourite competition.
Yeah, so the fact that we closed it out, that steely mentality, I mean, there's been signs of that growing throughout the team anyway.
Yeah.
But it was brilliant to just close out like that and just say, listen, this isn't going to use me, just blow it up, ref. Is what you would have heard a few years ago.
Alright, blow it up. I'm going to blow up the review then.
Oh, segue!
Yes, indeed. Okay, let's look forward to what many people see as the biggest game of the season, the visit of United, especially when there's so much riding on it. Hard not to be incredibly tense about this one. So they're coming to our place. Anything apart from a loss is probably a good result for them. Can we start off, Neil, with you analysing in great detail how a team as shite as United can be stumbling towards Champions League with so much momentum?
I don't watch them tonight, to be honest.
Fair enough.
I know, but literally, I can't abide them. I feel queasy watching them. So, and I don't really watch any other teams other than Liverpool. So I only really see them when they play us. So if you want the analysis, it's down to formations, philosophy, tactics. That big clipboard Van Gaal's got. I don't know. Maybe they're not as bad as we think. I don't know. Do you watch? Are they as bad? I mean, the amount of money they spent is it like, you know, over 100 million or whatever, and what they're paying in wages. All I could assume is that some of that quality must be, well, not Falcao, like, but the rest of them, some of that quality must just be coming through.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I think the league is that bad. There is a lot of dross, and if you look at pretty much, that's what's annoyed me about the sort of our run since Christmas, is everyone that we're competing with has had that same run. And it's almost like all the shit teams have dropped off at the same time.
Yeah.
And all the ones who are competing for the Champions League spot have found a level and have beaten those sides, whether, you know, even Southampton and Spurs. I mean, I wouldn't get too excited about, I mean, I never saw the game, but I wouldn't get too excited about them beating Spurs. I mean, we dicked them the last four times on the trot. I'm not very good at it, to be honest. I mean, they've gone from being like a bogey team of ours to one that you would gladly play, you know, every week.
Yeah.
So I'm not reading too much into the fact that Man United beat Spurs, who are shit, at home. It doesn't worry me. And you'll probably want me predictions on later. But I'm not too concerned about them because... Well, I haven't seen him, so I don't know what to be scared of, to be honest.
Yeah, that Andy Pooley there with some shatteringly good analysis of football that he's never watched. So that's particularly good day tripper stuff. I'm going to come to you about United as a force. I'm going to imagine that you've seen a bit of them. Is it actually what Neil put his finger on there, that there's enough of their good players actually coming good? Enough of the time for them to be where they are. Is that what it's all about? The quality?
No, I mean, like, when you think about the money they spent, Di Maria is going to pop into your head and Falcao. It's not these quality players that are seeing them through. It's very hard to put your finger on it. Like, they were so bad around the time they bashed us. Well, they didn't bash us. We put her up to them, but they beat us 3-0. They were so bad then, but, like, looking at them a bit lately, they were... The Spurs game is the first time they impressed me this season. I thought they were brilliant now in the first half. I thought Spurs rolled over a little bit, but they've went back to sort of playing a back four there, you know, the way the fans were chanting so
tactics.
Van Gaal went back to a flat back four, and it seems to be working out. From they play a diamond sometimes, they play two up top with Van Persie and Falcao and Rooney in behind, or lately Rooney on top up top in his own. So I'd say, like, playing us, they probably play Rooney up top in his own and play a diamond or some sort of a 4-2-3-1, something like that. They're not a team we should be scared of. Maybe as Neil says, they have decent players. We all know Manchester United have decent players, but Van Gaal is far from utilising them decent players. They're way better than he is getting them.
Okay.
So while he's there, as long as he's there, and Will Moyes is there, it's huge opportunities for us just blown away because Rodgers is a better manager than him. He has, like, they're ugly at the moment, like. And I mean, listen to Man United fans there. I think they're in a kind of a denial, like, you know, they'll admit to you that they're not happy, but they think just because it's not Moyes,
yeah,
that this is better, and because he's introduced all these quality players, that things are on the improvement. But I don't think their points is not a hell of a lot better. Maybe they're 5 or 6 points better off than they were at this stage last season or something. I'm not too sure.
What concerns me about them is, I'd echo the sentiments, anytime I've watched them, it's generally been against teams that you expect them to beat, and they've struggled to beat them or they've dropped points, right? But the games that I've watched them in, you know, the bigger matches, say the likes against Chelsea and Arsenal and stuff like that, their level seems to have come up about 3 or 4 or 5 levels from where they've been playing at, right? And they've gotten results out of it. I think they've got the best set of results against, say, the teams in the top 6 out of
us and them.
Yeah. Out of anyone else. So, you know, that's my concern, because when I look back at our run, and we talked about our run in February where it was all the hard teams, you're saying, Jesus, that's a really hard run of fixtures, yeah, and we need to do well in that. Like, they're facing it the same. They win with loads of confidence off the Spurs game. And as you said, look, they don't need to win. Once they don't lose, they're still 2 points clear of us.
Yeah.
Right? They're still top 4. They're still 2 points clear of us.
With
games running out, and it's still in their hands. And they're halfway through their really poor, like, their really hard spell in terms of matches. and knowing that we then have to go to Arsenal and Chelsea still as well, so there's potentially two games where we could drop points. So I'm looking at it saying, you know, for us, looking at them, they're going to come in. They're going to come in full of confidence, not so much in terms of the style of football they're playing, but the run of form that they've had in the big games, and they're not going to be fearing it at all. And the one thing about Van Halen, you know, he sort of confused me, because for a guy who's been so tactically adept over the course of his career and has had teams playing relatively good football wherever he's gone, probably with the exception of Holland in the World Cup, and now United in terms of the way they're playing as well, it seems very strange. But he will have looked at that Swansea game. He will look at how the game plan that they implemented against us, and he will look to replicate that with the players that he has. And it probably suits his team better in terms of setting up that way in a diamond with the midfielders, etc., that he has, to try go and replicate what Swansea did, but with better quality up front and better quality attacking-wise in terms of the individual players they have. So there's always going to be a threat there and a fear there in terms of them coming and scraping a result or fluking a result or getting something out of the game, which we think, if you're to stack the two teams up, stack the form up and stack the way the teams have been playing since Christmas, we should be clear winners and running clearly out.
But do you actually think you'll do that, as opposed to going to the default setting of hitting Fellaini?
No, I think he will, because that's the type he is. He may go to the default setting for the last 25 minutes or something if he wants to go and win the game, or he wants to get a goal back or something like that, you know what I mean? But I genuinely think, just looking at him, that he will have seen the Swansea game plan and said, well, they may have twigged this. They may have twigged this three at the back for him in field system. And it'll be interesting to see how Brendan has then counteracts against a fella who will look to change it as in play in terms of, and we'll look to change his tactics around. And if we change, then he'll look to change it again to try create new spaces and new opportunities against us if we go to a diamond. So I think it's going to be fascinating. I fucking hate this match. I hate this match more than any game in the year. I think it's especially an Irish team, because the majority of Irish football fans are either United or Liverpool. And like, when you walk into your job, it's one or the other. And you know, it's always in your face when things don't work out. And that 3-0 at Christmas just fucking killed me. Like, you know what I mean? Because we weren't even bad in the day. We could have got easily come out with a 3-3 draw with the amount of chances, clear chances that we had against the game and the whole lot. So I'm already coiled up like a fucking wound spring thinking about this match. And it's like, just get us the win. Get us the win. Get our noses in front. Get the fucking win. Get it into our hands for the first time this season for top four. Just keep going. The next three games, put three fucking wins. And then if we go into the Chelsea match or whatever, whether it's four games, whatever, just put the wins on the board up to the Chelsea game. And if we drop some points there, we drop some points there. Just let's get this fucking game and get the win under our belts. Forget what's gone on before. It's just the next four games, get fucking four wins and, you know, we're almost there. We're almost there. Six more wins from our nine games gives us 72 points. And as Andy did and as Andy Nomics spot, 72 points normally guarantees you a top four place. So that's what you're looking at. Six wins to get it.
That was really enjoyable, because you started off just getting two more wins. No, it was just get four, just six wins. Fucking brilliant.
Just nine more wins.
Neil, Phil is articulating what we're all thinking there. It's not an enjoyable match, is it, this one? Or do you have a different take on the
That's nervous
rest?
Excitement, doesn't it? I kind of get a bit of a buzz out of that idea, what I mean? Yeah, because my life is severely lacking and I'll buzz at the minute.
Good man.
So I get a bit of a buzz out of that. No, but I tell you what it is for me. This match, although if you take it on its own as 90 minutes, this game, the build up to this game has started months ago, and it was always just get ourselves in a position where if we can play them for 3 points and we beat them, we can move on and pass them out. I mean, that. So the build up for me has been happening for 2 months, or since we had our turnaround. This was always, if we can just get it, give ourselves a chance, and like we're 80% of the way there now, just the last little push, get us across the line, the last 20%, get the 3 points and move on. So I see it as not a match on its own, but it's something that's been growing and building for months on end. And I honestly do think we're going to beat them.
And do you think that could be the deciding psychological thing?
Well, I think psychologically, because of we were so badly turned over down there, like a 3-0, it's the scoreline.
On paper,
it's a proper turnover, isn't it?
Yeah.
So to go from where we were then, like we're at a really low ebb, and if we can beat them, take their position in the Champions League, that's the turnaround complete.
Yeah.
Like, isn't it from? Yeah. It's black and white, yin and yang, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have that motivation. And they got it right in the second half. And I wouldn't be too worried myself about Van Gaal doing what Swansea did in the first half, because we countered that and we blew, I know they have better players, fair enough, but we blew Swansea away in the second half with 70% possession or something like that. And the score should have been a lot higher. So, I mean, I think he'll be thinking more along the lines of, well, sure, Rodgers figured out that. I mean, there's no point in playing that because they blew Swansea away. So he's going to have to come up with something else.
He'd be asking different type of players to do that. He'd be asking Mata to do that. Like, Mata, Chelsea were delighted to see the back of Mata. Mata won't really do that for you, like that sort of donkey work, you know.
That's not
mean?
That's the point I was making. Like, he hasn't got that option because Rodgers, in my opinion, has already answered that question. If that's the formation you want to go with, you know what I mean.
And what about Di Maria? Is he suspended?
He must be still suspended. So he pushed the ref, didn't he?
Yeah, but he got a second yellow for that.
Yeah, I don't know if any kicks in either.
There's research, there's kind of players, there's kind of their more advanced midfielders
like Di Maria, Fellaini, Mata, who else, Januzaj. You're not really thinking they'll do that job quite so well. And I mean, they're more forward thinking players, so Joe Allen, Henderson, whoever, they should be able to find a little
Which is why you can see him reverting to the default setting with like, oh, fuck it, let's lump it at Fellaini and see what happens.
I wouldn't say they go at the start. I'm not sure Liverpool have three centre halves.
Yeah, no, I don't mean from the start, but when that pressing possibly doesn't start the way.
I think if they do, right?
Yeah.
In fairness, I think Carragher pointed out, with three centre backs, where they were getting the space to hit Fellaini, right? One of our centre backs can step out and always challenge for the headers, and he won't get clean or free headers on it. Like, if they put him up alongside Chan loves to come and attack a header.
Yeah.
And he doesn't mind the fucking physical battle going on as well. So that doesn't bother me as much. I just think, you know, as I said, these games often turn into fucking lottery jobs in terms of, you know, it's always so tight, it's always so nervy. So many times a mistake opens up the first goal, and then you often see the team that scores the first goal maybe score a second or a third because on a counter attack, and that's where my fucking nerves are, because we will chase the game. If we go one down, we will go and chase the game, and maybe then we get a little bit exposed because we're going to chase it hard. But if we go one up, then we're going to have so much space to exploit against them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's just going to open up for us. And when you've got the likes of Sterling and even Sturridge, if you get Sturridge up against any of the plebs they have at centre back, like, he's going to batter them. Even if he can't run, he's going to batter them. Mm. You know what I mean? Just once, if he has the finishing boots on, we're going to be in such a good position.
Well, as Andy said, he's so close. And he's twisting and turning the guts out of people.
And I think a big game in front of Anfield, you know, for Sturridge in his own head, to be able to score maybe one or two against United to win the match, to put us back massive, top four. Yeah. This is where he says, I'm back.
Yeah.
And I'm back with a fucking vengeance.
And I am the man, yeah, absolutely. Neil, a couple of the things we talked about earlier on, we just flagged them up. We said we'd return them in the preview. Centre around selection. And I suppose we'll start with the club captain. For you, is there an argument? I know you've kind of touched on it already, but is there an argument for Jarrett to start? Or if there's not, do you think there's a likelihood, given Brendan has shown indications towards sentimentality in the past in his selections?
No, I don't think there is an argument for him to start. I actually don't think he will start. I mean, it seems with him going and with him being out and with us playing so well, I mean, I think he's proven with Sacco that he's got back to that sort of meritocracy sort of way of judging the players, where Sacco was playing so well, he got injured, and then, you know, he played at half for the reserves, did okay in that, and then he's come back straight into the team. That's his position. I think the same happens with Gerrard, but, you know, the inverse of it, where he won't just come back in the team because, you know, Alan's been playing well there. I mean, that's who I assume he'd replace, unless he's going to sort of put him in the front three, which I don't think would be advisable. So I think Brendan might have just got over that, so that thing with Gerrard now, and I don't think he will just sort of throw him in at the start. And no, I don't think he should either. But and in terms of Sturridge, I personally would rather Sturridge came on. I agree entirely what the lad said there about, you know, he'd be well up for it in his head. It's Sturridge against Man United, and, you know, he's got like a decent record of scoring against them. But I think I'd quite like to see him come on with, you know, for like a second half or with half an hour to go. Pretty much, I'd go with how we started against Man City, you know, with Sterling and Coutinho, Lallana, and that, you know, that real energy and high pressing, and really do what we did last season as such, and just, you know, trying to get out of the traps.
Yeah.
Then you've got the likes of Gerrard and Sturridge there to just come on as substitutions and make a real impact if you needed. That's how I go for it, whether he does that, whether he listens to me or not, I don't know.
I'm sure he does listen to you, man. Andy Young's nodding his head there in agreement. You'd be inclined to go.
Yeah, Neil's just talking a huge amount of sense there. Like, I agree 100%. exactly the way we went against City, and just from the very beginning, just go with them. Like, I mean, opposite to Swansea, pretty much. Mm. Like, the temptation for Rodgers must be there to sort of soak it up and maybe catch them on the counter or whatever, or just feel ourselves into the game. I just really hope he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd be happy to see Sturridge on the pitch if he's on the pitch, because I really do think he could do something against United this weekend. But if I was picking a team, I'd be going exactly against City and just busy three up front, like, you know what I mean? The fear is there that they would have a good game against them three, because they're not as clinical maybe as Sturridge. If he took a chance, like, you know,
yeah,
the Gea is not going to just, you know, Sturridge is top class once he's in on goal. Mm. And then Gerrard, man, do you know any way I can see Gerrard getting into the team if someone gets a knock towards the end of the week in training or something like that?
Yeah,
I just think I'd be just flabbergasted with Rodgers now if he was to turn around and put Gerrard
into
the team.
Even a poor Lallana, and he was poor, let's be honest, against Swansea, you don't see him coming out for Gerrard?
No. I mean, like, Lallana's getting a lot of stick. He's doing grand. He's doing fine. You know, he's a squad player, and he's quick feet, and he can create something, and he has a pass, and he keeps possession. Mm. He's doing what Rodgers wants him to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I mean, he could probably try and take a bit of a less one touch, like, you know what I mean, move the ball a bit quicker, as he did, you know, before he got injured, and he was playing quite well. So I'd be going how they went against City, and he was decent versus City.
Neil, one area that is kind of up for grabs is the wing back kind of area of the pitch, and you've got various personnel there who could come in or come out. What are you thinking that looks like? Do you see Markovic come back in?
Well, I suppose it is a problem area, isn't it? Well, it's hard to call it a problem area, really, when we're winning and not conceding goals. It's very hard to single any area out as a problem. It's a weak area, maybe. Probably no more weak than the left wing back, in my opinion. But yeah, I suppose you'd be very reluctant to put Sterling in there anyway, because you want him busy up front. I mean, just to echo what Andy and Neil were saying, you want them busy up front, and you want the all out, all in, all action, like we did with City. But, you know, it's very hard to replicate one performance against a separate team. But so Sterling would be wasted in there. So Markovic, I suppose, but I mean, we did get it right in the second half against Swansea, you know what I mean? So it swings and roundabouts, isn't it? It's 6 of 1 half, it doesn't matter. Markovic hasn't let us down. Anytime he's played, he's be full of energy. And he's not good. Listen, his final ball isn't great. I mean, his final ball from the left hand side is really poor at times as well, from the left wing back.
Well, what would be your personal call for it then? Just like, in other words, what does the team look like? If you're suggesting that fluid three up front with Sturridge on the bench, is that what you're thinking?
No, I'd play Sturridge.
You play Sturridge.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So then who does take that right wing back spot for you in preference?
I'd probably start the way we started against Swansea.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Phil, what do you think about that?
If it's not working, we showed against Swansea, we can change it around and make them 11 players work.
Make the changes. Yeah.
I wouldn't start Lallana.
You wouldn't?
No. I think Markovic is a better right wing back. I don't think he's the solution, but I think he's a better right wing back than Lallana, and I want Sterling and Coutinho up in that top three.
Is Jordan Ibe the solution long term?
Yeah, but he's not fit.
I said long term.
Well, long term, it'll be interesting. You could develop him that way if that's what your formation is going to be, because he definitely has all the skill sets needed in terms of pace, physicality, you know, ability on the ball, and he's young and is more than capable of learning that position. And let's be honest about it, it's not really a wing back. We're playing with attacking wingers. You know, when we pin them back, we play with attacking wingers. Moreno is a good fullback, but he's also a very effective wing back in terms of what it is. So you're looking to sign somebody. If there's talk of Dani Alves being available at the end of the season, you know, to come in as an experienced player, he'd be ideal for playing, you know, as a right wing back, and then training and developing Ibe in that position as well. So, you know, for me, that's what. But looking at it at Sunday, if it's a choice between Lallana and Markovic in terms of who starts at right wing back, I certainly wouldn't be putting Sterling. I think we knew it was Sterling when we put him in as a wing back, and I want them up top because I think he can do all sorts of damage in an attacking threat. Mm. And for me, I start Sturridge. I know for all the poorness that's been going on. As I said, my take is I just think he's going to be so up for this game, and I think he brings that. Going back to Andy's bit, we're playing against a goalkeeper who's absolutely world class. He's in the top five goalkeepers in the world, without a shadow of a doubt at this stage, right? And I want my most clinical finisher on the park, Because when we get chances, we can't afford, you know, to, we can't have 3, 4, 5 chances before we can score a goal. We need to score as many as we possibly can, as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah.
So that's why it starts right there. So that's, bar that, like, I don't see any other changes. I wouldn't start Stevie. I'd keep him on the bench for exactly what I said. Impact sub, that's the best way to go. And if we have to bring Stevie off the bench against United, the fucking roar and the noise that's going to come on when he appears on is going to be frightening. Yeah, right? Yeah, and it's going to drive the crowd again. And hopefully the crowd is well up. And it normally is a great atmosphere for these games. So, you know, that's the extra spark for that second half that really goes in. But no, I wouldn't, outside of that, that's the only position for grabs for me is the wing back role, and I'd start Markovic there, because again, I think Markovic can destroy Shaw. You know, genuinely, I think if he gets a Shaw, and he roasted Rocco, for Marco Lopez was saying that he roasted, absolutely roasted Lopez last year when he was when he's playing against Lisbon last year. So Lopez is not going to want to see him come up. Lopez again, Rocco. But he's not going to want to start against Markovic, because he's going to be having nightmares about last season when he sees him. So there's a bit of psychology going on there as well. But listen, if you know, I don't. That's me thinking on it.
That's your thing.
I'm fucking nervous. I swear to God, I'm wound up like a fucking spring over this.
It's slightly obvious.
The tension for this game for me started as soon as the final whistle went against Swansea. I was just thinking, bastards, I just want to beat these.
There's actually nothing enjoyable about this match for me ever. I can't enjoy it. Neil, let's get the ball rolling with our predictions. What do you think, fella? What's your shout?
I think we'll win quite comfortably in the end. I reckon it might be 3-1. My worry, and it goes back to what Phil says, you know what, these like annoying like little things that might happen. I think it's Martin Atkinson who's refereeing it.
Yeah.
And he's not a great referee. He loves giving a penalty. And when you've got the likes of Rooney and Di Maria and Ashley Young, who are all diving rats, it does worry me that there might be, you know, the classic controversial incident that goes against us. I mean, don't get me wrong, I couldn't give a shit if we get a penalty we don't deserve. In fact, that'd make it better. So with the exception of that little worry and something like that happening, then I'm quite confident going into this game. I'm saying that now, but I won't be on Sunday. But at this moment in time, I'm quite confident, and I can see he's actually getting a few goals against him. So I'm going to go 3-1.
3-1 from Pearly Andy.
Yeah, it's going in my, either way, one of two ways for me. It's a scrappy 1-1 draw. I don't see us being beat. I really don't. Or else, if they go with them from the start, we're gonna like bash them, because there's someone all season being promised to bash United. They're that bad at the back. They just haven't been punished. They just haven't been. So it's between 1-1 and 3-0 or 4-0, something mad like that for me.
So
like, I'm not going to see the game live, so I just know it'll be my luck to miss a cracker. So I'm going to say Liverpool 4 Man United 0.
Lovely stuff.
And Andy,
I'm enjoying the hell out of this. Neil, what are you thinking?
I'm confident as always, Trev.
Are you?
Yeah, a 2-3-0, I'd say. I can't see them scoring against the fucking rubbish. No, honestly, like, there's no point. I know it's a bit, you know, a game we're all stressed over and all, but they're not really any good, and we're playing really well, so that tells me we win 2 or 3-0.
Yeah, well, clearly.
All right. Will that do you?
I'll take that, Phil. Obviously, it's 2-1 is my shout, because, like, what the fuck else would it be at this stage of the season? Phil?
There's something just says to me that we lose.
Oh, thanks.
But I think, and it's the Liverpool thing. We lose, but we'll still end up making top four.
Right.
There'll be that fucking dejection and depression that it looks like it's gone.
But we come back.
Yeah, because we love a Hollywood story.
Like when we got beat by Chelsea and won the league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fee puts 5 points between us again. It'd be such a kick in the stones, wouldn't it?
I know.
But would you take a draw now?
No.
Because I think I would, because...
I think I would as well.
I don't think I would, now, to be honest.
No. I think they're dropping more points than us between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, the last
a draw to avoid... We're here now, if you're offered a draw, to avoid defeat and to put 5 points between us, it's probably not too bad.
Mm, mm, maintain status quo and take your chance.
But fuck,
the last
I prefer 4-0. Hashtag 81 points.
I want 9-0
for the last 9 games.
Is that your official prediction?
What?
9-0.
Yeah.
Okay, but before we finish, Neil, would you tell us a thing or two about We Are Liverpool, the fanzine, and talk to us a little bit about that before we finish up?
It's a Liverpool fanzine. We're on issue 7 at the moment, which I'm quite gobsmacked we got that far, to be honest.
Yeah.
I've still got a few left of the latest issue. I'll be selling it outside the ground from about 2 hours before kickoff. So I don't know what time kickoff is on.
It's half one, like,
half one. Yeah, that's probably why I sell fuck all.
There on Friday.
I thought it was dark. It's also on sale, home baked and hat scarf or a bad shop, which is by the Flatiron, if you don't want to buy it off me, or my mates, or my dad.
The web address?
We are liverpoolfanzine.com. There's loads of good stuff in there. Yeah, you boys are in there as usual, regulars, excellent. Loads of good stuff in there. So, buy it. It's only £1.50.
And how many are you expecting to get in before the end of the campaign, Neil?
Got one more that's going to be out for the QPR game, which is on the 2nd of May. So that'll be the last one. And then in the summer, there'll be a free digital-only version. So where at the moment, you've got to subscribe digitally or you buy the hard copy. I'm just going to do a free digital one. I might do a handful of hard copies for people who want them, but because some people collect them and that and would actually want it. But so there'll be a free one probably in June, just to sort of look back at the season.
Whenever you tell the writers, basically.
Yeah.
All right, listen, thanks a million, Neil, for all the contribution. Really appreciate it.
I am Lou Schwarre. You are listening to Trippers Chat.
Okay. All right, Neil.
Shiver now, I'll be back there. I was thinking about that United match. I think I'm out there shitting myself. Lovely.
That's pretty much the perfect start to this section of the show anyway. Neil, a couple of questions in from Lloyd. Start you with the first one. Lloyd asks you, what would you grab first? What item would you grab first if your house was on fire? We'll just leave people out of it. So apart from people, what item would you grab first?
I don't fucking know. What a question.
Fire extinguisher would be a good start.
trust Andy to have a take on this.
I don't know. I was going to say my dog, but I haven't got a dog.
So that would have been a shit answer.
You'd be stuck in the fucking fire. Come back in looking for the dog. I'm going to burn to death. Where's me fucking dog? You haven't got a dog. I have got a dog. I grabbed the young lad, surely. After I got the dog.
The first thing I said to you was not a person. No, you said a thing. What thing?
A dog.
What thing could you
I don't know, me phone. I don't know. I'm a fire extinguisher. It's just a bucket with water in
Neil,
it.
Neil, see, you're seriously under pressure here.
I don't know, man.
Phil, got a shout?
Boxers. Because you're... Because I'll be arrested when I'm
that's fair enough. So you'd want to watch your house burn down in a sort of
at least with some clothes on. Yeah.
Or clean ones.
Clean ones, yeah.
I'd have anything embarrassing in the house because all my mates coming, like, rummaging around the gap.
Your massive dildo collection.
Yeah, where is she?
Yeah, that box.
His doll too.
The doll face. Let's put me doll face down, me Jackson.
They'd be in a fireproof box. They'd be grand.
That wouldn't be embarrassing. Your doll face stuck down your jocks on your mate's thrown up. How did this fire start?
Lloyd also asked, what do you miss most about being a kid?
All them fires that we got.
His dog.
I miss my dog Crispy. I used to love him. Little Crispy, he was a lovely little fella.
I miss chocolate bars being huge.
I do as well, yeah.
Yeah, that is something to be.
They are now fun size by comparison.
Yeah.
If you think about a snake, what was it? Marathon.
And being able to jump off roofs and not hurt yourself.
Boy, well, I don't know about that.
That was only when it was into hay, man.
I used to jump off the back roof and just land on the grass, and it was grand.
What, did you have a front roof and a back roof?
Yeah.
How big was that gaff?
Fucking huge, man.
It can't be the innocence of a child. Like, so that's, you know, like, your hopes and dreams, like, yeah, before you realise that everyone in the world is a prick. Do you remember, like,
okay to eat cheese every day. Yeah.
When you're younger, you had a lot more faith in humanity.
Yeah.
It's only when you get older you realise, like, this fucking...
This is shit.
Yeah, you know.
That only happened to me when I was 35. Up to then, I thought everyone was sound.
Yeah, it is true, like, as you get older, maybe you just get cynical yourself, but you just see the bad in everyone.
do you know what I miss most from my childhood, just thinking of it there? When I was about six, I had one. I remember them Tonka toys used to be sitting on a big steel. One of them was robbed on me. Yeah. But I'm still not really over that. Honestly, I was only thinking about that about 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
I never fucking got that back. I wonder if my dad put it in the buy and sell. No, but I do. That was heartbreaking.
How
stuff,
everything is possible as a child, right? And, like, even one of the thing for me is, like, I used to spend hours just playing football and being the best footballer in the world.
And you thought it could have happened for you.
I miss, like, I used to commentate on my own game.
Yeah.
So, like, when the lads be playing football, I'll be commentating while we're playing as well.
Yeah.
Or if you wanted to know something, just ask your ma, because she knows fucking everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you have to check Google and everything.
Yeah. And your ma knows.
Just ask your ma. Yeah. Your ma hasn't a clue what's
happening. Your ma hasn't a clue.
When you were, like, say, 13, 14, did you think you were going to play for Ireland and Liverpool and everyone?
I fucking knew it. I definitely was. Definitely.
Yeah, because I was, yeah. Yeah, no, I did. I thought there was a chance that I was going to make it.
Yeah,
because I was like getting trials and stuff, so I was like, it's there in front of you.
Trials up until about 13. When do you give up, Andy? When do you give up the ghost of ever
believing?
You might be a little
when Balotelli signs.
I gave up football when I was about 24.
Hang on, you didn't think at 24 you might have made it.
McAteer didn't make it, you know.
In right.
But it's not as a kid, even at 26, like, when a couple of opportunities to go League of Ireland at that stage, one of the first game was going to be against Sunderland. Had a sign for them. I was coming back off injury. I didn't. And you're like, even then, at that age, you think to yourself, you know, if we have a really good game there,
you never know
what could happen. Like, do you know what I mean? No, Jay, it still goes through your head. You still have those fucking dreams, even at an older age, when you know, like, it's completely unlikely and implausible.
You have
to
dream even still. You're sitting in the cop and someone throws you. Got your boots, lad?
No, because Pascoe's ahead.
That's just
of
me then.
Finish usually out of his face when he's in outfield. I'm not going to ask him.
Have you got your boots?
I'm drinking.
Just wipe that tickle off.
I was thinking, Farrell, you never, was it George Weah's fucking cousin or something in
these? Soonest signed him, didn't he, for Southampton? Yeah. Isn't that what it was, wasn't it?
They just spinning him a yarn. Like, how would you think it, Farrell? Say, yeah, cousin was playing in the Premier League and says, listen, my mate is deadly. Like, and there was stuff for a player. How bad do you think it looked? Like?
What now?
Do you think the fans would cop on straight away?
The current issue you? I think they might know. I think they might know.
A pair of 15-year-old predators on you.
Who's the fucking pirate? Right, who's the pirate playing for
Liverpool? Well, it's such a real scenario, right? You looked a bit younger.
Yeah.
But you were physically as incapable. That's your feel now.
That's your feel now.
Would they cop it with your first touch?
Within 5 minutes. Right. Maybe two touches. They're going to see it, aren't they?
They'd see it in the warm-up.
You could see it in Andrew Varlin immediately.
I still don't rate myself being much worse than Brad Jones, so I might get away with it.
For fuck's sake. For the love of Christ. On the same kind of topic, Barry Scott's wondering, what was your favourite bike as a kid?
Bang, and the bike is gone.
A clever Twitter handle.
I probably should have shouted that, shouldn't I? But anyway, yeah, Barry's wondering, what's your favourite bike?
As a kid,
yeah. What was your favourite bike?
I had a blue and yellow Rally Borner at the time of BMX.
Oh, they were brilliant.
With the five mags on the,
had you
on the
mags?
Wheels. Yeah.
Mag wheels.
And it was the five mag wheel, not the seven one, so it was fucking savage.
Oh, you must
and I still had it, right, and I had fucking the gear to go with it and all. Yeah. Like, obviously, in Ireland being the hub of fucking BMX heaven, like, we used to go up to...
You had all the gear, right?
Yeah.
I had a mag burner. Yeah. Is that what it, I had a rally mag.
It was blue. It had
green mag wheels on it.
No, this had yellow mag wheels on it.
They were the cheapest. Yeah, mag at that in Thomas Street.
This was fucking top end.
Look at you fucking middle class. I couldn't afford
a
mag.
There was a BMX track.
It was a penny for engine. You were thinking of anyway. One big massive mag wheel.
Two sort of race BMX tracks, one up in the Phoenix Park.
There's one in the Fino, right? Yeah.
And then there was one up in Marley Park that they built specially for it. And I used to fly around there thinking it was the bee's knees. It must have been about 7 at the time. That was just spectacular.
Ah, BMX.
Do you ever have one of them bikes with no brakes? They used to stop you.
The back wheel brakes.
The back wheel.
Pedal back brakes.
Yeah, yeah. The handiest way to stop them is you put your heel
into the back.
Yeah, and you can do a deadly skate that way.
Yeah, or you could break your leg.
Do you remember the times your foot got in there accidentally? Like, oh, Jesus!
Yeah, I was the worst cyclist ever.
And what were you cycling? What was your bike? Did you BMX as well?
Like, I would have had just all the different bikes. Like,
a little
BMX.
Little racer.
And fucking mountain bike and all that. But it didn't matter what I was cycling. I had a near-death experience. I got knocked down in the laneway. See, where I lived, there was lanes around the back, which led into the field. And there used to be a great little kind of jump across from the laneway into the field.
Yeah.
So everyone did that. Everyone cleared it. And I'm fucking billion up into the laneway. And everyone's going, no, no, no. This is a car coming down the lane. But like, I thought they were egging me on. Like, just fucking cycling straight on from the... Anybody else would have known that's a warning sign to stop.
But you turned into
cycle out. Going to school one morning, just cycle straight into the railings for no reason. And fucking split me head open. I was knocked out, hospital job, fractured skull. And then.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And then, and I fractured my skull with the car accident as well. And then another time I was up with me.
Should have got a helmet, Andy, after the person.
You really should have got a helmet.
Nobody
had helmets. They only had those leather helmets at the time. Just strips of leather on your head. Yeah, that's
me
a helmet.
All right. Lives up in Old Bond, and the daughter running down there, and it was a great little cycle track. All the kids used to come flying down the hill and along the river. Yeah. And of course, fucking Muggins here went down the bank into the river.
E.T.
Caught me lip on the way down, and a lip fucking nearly come off my face.
Caught your actual lip.
Yeah, look, see the scar there.
Get the fuck. Is that what the lip
was separated from my face.
Oh, for the Christ. Yeah. Fucking hell.
That was horrific. Hell. But so, like, you remember that bike to work scheme came out? Like, that was a tough decision. I was sort of saying, like, am I safe on the bike? And the first time I got the bike, I was dying to cycle, but it was kind of frosty, come snow out, and I said, oh, fuck it anyway, you know what I mean? Everyone's cycling this weather, like, I'd be grand. And I got me fucking feet caught in the pedals. I just keeled over, like, on the road. And like the crowd of youngsters in the lower civic just breaking their shit laughing.
How many times of fractured skulls is it going to take before you steer clear of bikes, man?
I saw that bike, but now I'm entitled to that bike to work scheme again.
Just don't do it, buddy.
But I'm so tempted. It's probably just as well, just leaving it.
Yeah, motorbike.
Oh, imagine. I'd be fucked.
Floyd is wondering, what's your car song? The song that when it comes on and you're in the car, you just have to give it everything, give it socks and sing along to it. What's your song?
Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time.
Does that happen much?
Yeah. It's on my playlist.
It's on your playlist, all right.
I fucking love that tune.
Do you?
Yeah.
So you give it socks, you sing.
Oh, fucking bounce around the car singing it.
Yeah. So Eddie Murphy. But Andy says.
No particular one. Just sometimes when you're just in the mood and you're
Would you be a
along.
Singer in the car?
Oh, fucking right, yeah. Rolling in the window and all. Do you remember last year when Poetry in Motion was gone?
Yeah.
And the original song. Like, I got that. Downloaded that, got it onto the phone just to fucking
the
listen
Boney
to
M
it.
One.
Boney M
one,
just listen to it. And I used to blare that in the car, windows down, just fucking shout, Poetry Emotion! And everyone just like, looking at fucking mad cunt going on. But that was a brilliant car song. I was listening to that like on repeat.
That's a happy car song. Are you a good singer,
yeah? Amazing.
Quality.
Amazing.
Neil, good singer? Good car singer?
Yeah, well, everybody is, isn't it? What's your favourite car song, Jeff?
I just go for stuff that I've got the range for. That's not much.
Yeah, stay within your range.
Yeah.
So just talking.
A bit of Nick Cave, but something deep.
I can't hit the high notes.
Surely high notes.
Struggle with You Never Walk Alone. There's a part.
Yeah, there's a part
alone.
Of that. That's right.
He's got, and like I just purposely stopped singing for that.
Yeah.
Imagine if everyone just stopped singing for that bit right now and came back in.
I was actually going to ask if you're a good car singer, but we hear you singing every fucking time before you come up to the pod. It's terrifying.
It's fucking brilliant.
Do you know what part it is? It's walk on through the wind. If you sing that loud,
forget about it.
Forget about it.
You start getting that crunky shit.
If you don't go in at the right note, if you start off too high, you're fucked.
Start off in the wrong octave.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
You don't want to be. You sound like a castrati.
You do sound like a castrati. I don't. You have to. You have to hit the pitch.
Yeah.
For that.
Mm-hmm. I have balls.
Fuck's sake. Last one here.
Anything but a Stone Roses, basically, is my answer.
Hang on. So you
just let me answer. Like,
you can actually sing the Stone Roses.
I didn't say I could sing them. Even Ian can't sing them now.
Yeah, okay. Right, this is last one then. This is from John. And John says, John obviously hasn't listened to a full episode of the podcast because he says, Trev, you manage a very unruly dressing room very well. That's you people, by the way. What Premier League manager are you most like, and who do lads think they're most like? So that's the question I'm going to put to you around the table. What Premier League manager do you think you're most like?
Why leave you out?
Just leave me out.
You're more director of football, Trev.
Yeah, I think I am. Yeah,
with a one eye.
Feel free to include me. From your own point of view,
definitely Timmy for you.
How the fuck am I Timmy? Where are you going with that?
I
did it. Checking me balls, you fucking prick.
Yeah, there's no Cyclops managers.
Oh, Steve the Pirate. There you go. I'm fucking
Gary Monk. Steve the Pirate. Yeah.
Army tactics. We're fine there, boy.
So, anyone else?
What manager do I remind me of?
Who are you most like, managerially speaking?
I think I'd be like Kenny.
Would you?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I'd be a belligerent fucker with the media.
Yeah.
I'd be more into the older type of football and, you know, how
you
go
game about. As it comes and all
yeah,
that kind
game
of stuff.
Game of training.
Five a sides of training.
Game of training. Kenny.
Game of training.
That's what I was just right last. Game of training.
Game of training. Three laps and a game of training.
Game of training.
Phil, who are you most like? I know you'd love to be like, but Mourinho, but realistically speaking, who are you most like?
It's a tough one, isn't it?
I think I'm like Brendan, personally. I do. Seriously.
Why?
Huh?
Why?
Well, flawed.
Because I'm full of shit. I'm a waffler.
Yeah.
I've a waffle.
Yeah, I don't know.
But at the back of it, there is some sense there, and you know, yeah, I go with Brendan. I know you want to be Jose.
No, I wouldn't be that arrogant. Well, I won't be that arrogant.
Oh my God!
Actually, I won't be that arrogant.
The most ridiculous thing's been said all night. Yeah, yeah, it's Jose.
Louis van Dahl,
yeah.
Yeah.
With the mask.
The
double size mask.
And Neil?
Neil's a bit like Klopp, isn't he?
Klopp, great. Yeah.
There you go, Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that, shouldn't I?
The Hitler Youth.
I'm happy with that. Yeah. Perfect. I don't know, David Moyes.
Oh, go on.
It's football genius. Football genius, exactly.
Actually, Fat Sam, that's who I am.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I reckon I'm a football genius. Well, it's clearly not. Like, but I reckon I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be into scatting.
I was going. Yeah, thanks for going there. That'll do. Fucking hell. We finish with some admin. Our weekly shout for our kind host Astro Park, and you can book your pitch time at astropark.ie. Don't forget that the AI channel app will launch towards the end of the month, and we'll be on there as one of the flagship podcasts. Exciting time, so keep an eye out for that. Your day trippers tonight were Neil Poole and the young Neil Gray, Phil Casey, and myself, Trev Downey.
Is it still there?
No, the only guy is gone.
The only man who gets his eye taken out because he's a headache. I have a headache. I think I'll take out my eye.
Yeah, we went with the extraction, Trev. I hope that's all right. Sound, Jay. I have no headache.
Your eye's grand now.
Put it back in there.
There it is.
It's in a match
that's
box.
Causing the problems.
Bet you doesn't feel any pain now.
Yeah.
You put a cat's eye back in.